Get ready, Texarkana. A Taste of Ireland is bringing the rhythm, energy, and magic of the Emerald Isle to the Pearl Theatre on Wednesday, March 26th. This global sensation features world champion dancers, including stars of Riverdance and Lord of the Dance, in an epic production. With hundreds of five-star reviews from around the world, it's more than just a show. It's a journey through Ireland's history, packed with heart, humour, and Celtic charm. Tickets at atasteofirelandshow.com.
Thanks so much for doing this, Haley. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So we're recording this on Thursday, the 27th. That's the Thursday after the Monday you were first on The Voice, correct?
Yes.
So we're all abuzz here in the Four States region. We're so excited for you. It's a big story. What was it like? How did you keep your cool when that first chair turned around?
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to be so honest. I was so in the moment whenever the chairs did turn around, I didn't realize. I had no idea. It wasn't until I got back to center stage and looked up and saw Michael and Kelsey looking at me that I was like, oh, my goodness, they really turned around.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah. So how long have you been singing that song? It's an oldie but a goodie.
That song, I've only been singing for maybe 2 years now. But I've been singing for about four now, like actually taking it seriously.
Yeah.
I wanted to do something that, may emotionally connect with the coaches. And I knew going into it that I wanted to represent classic country. So I felt like that was like the best song that I could go with.
That's great. So let's back up a little bit. Tell me about life in Redwater, Texas. Tell me about your family.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. So I come from, my dad is a logger. My mom is a stay-at-home mom, always has been most of my life. And then I've got two older sisters. Mm-hmm. One sister, Krista, she works up at Bi-State. She's a court clerk.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And then my other sister, Amber, works at St. Michael's.
Oh, sounds like a lovely troop.
Yes. And
were you born here in the area?
I was. Yes, I was actually born at Wadley Hospital.
Oh, okay. Just a hop, skip, and a jump from where I am right now.
Yes.
So what do you remember about growing up around here? When was the first time you got the bug to be a singer? When was it someone noticed your voice and you thought, wow, this is something I want to keep doing?
So what happened, what kind of got me into singing? Of course, I've been singing since I was able to speak, more or less. But I was big into fast pitch travel softball for many, many years. And I had a bad slot into second, which I ended up breaking my right leg doing so.
No. Ouch.
And I had received a pawn shop guitar from my parents the Christmas prior. Uh-huh. I didn't have anything better to do. I went home. I wasn't getting around real well. And I picked that guitar up. I taught myself how to play. And I really just honed in on everything and took my singing a little more serious at that point. Well, from there, I actually ended up going to an open mic night out at Cross Ties.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you know, I didn't want to do it. My mom and sister kind of forced me into it, but you know, it was good for me. I needed to do it. Mm-hmm. And I was happy that they had made me go. But they kind of pushed me into it. They were like, hey, just try it. You might like it. And if not, you don't have to do it. And, so I go out there and multiple people started going live on like Facebook and things like that.
Oh, wow.
And before I knew it, I had booked two or three gigs that night.
Holy cow. Wow. Yes. That's a star shooting straight up. All right.
The real kicker with that story is I booked those gigs and I went home and I was bragging to my mom. I was like, oh my goodness. And I got booked at this venue and this venue. And she was like, Haley, you don't own a microphone or a PA system or any of this stuff. How are you going to do it? And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. So we ended up overnighting a few things and everything played out.
There you go. Sometimes you got to jump off that cliff and build your wings on the way down.
Absolutely.
I know you can't talk about what's to come on The Voice. So what is it like to keep the secret, though? You're not able to tell anybody what happened?
it was eating at me because, of course, only my immediate family knew about it. And I wanted to go around and be like, oh, my gosh, like I'm actually getting to do this. This is crazy. But I had to keep it hush hush. And yeah, it was definitely eating at me. I wanted to blab about it, but I was like, OK, let's just wait. Let's calm down. They'll see it eventually.
Yeah. I must have been really hard.
Definitely.
So you're playing here in Texarkana on the 8th at the Wild Hare, correct?
Yes.
So what can people expect from a Haley Wright show?
It is definitely a lot of classic country. Like I said, that's kind of what I try to represent. Now, I do a little bit of some classic rock, and I try to have something for everybody in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes there'll be a little more like honky tonk style country, some modern country. I throw in a little bit of classic rock, some grunge music. And then, of course, like I said, the classic country.
All right. Well, thanks so much for taking some time. How can people connect with you? Is there like a Team Haley site or something?
So currently I don't have like a website up and going, but a lot of people go over to my Facebook page at Haley Wright Music,
mm-hmm.
and that's a good way to connect. Honestly, that goes for all of my social media platforms. I've got Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, all that good stuff.
Okay, great. Well, we're rooting for you, and stay in touch. We'll be really interested to see how it plays out.
Yes, thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks for taking the time.
Of course.
As you all know, this is the 150th anniversary year of the Texarkana Gazette, and I have two special guests with me today to put that into some context. We have Katie Atkins, who's project director of the Arkansas Digital Newspaper Project at the Arkansas State Archives, and Dr. David Ware, state historian at the Arkansas State Archives. Did I get all that right?
Yes.
All right. Welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Sure.
Thank you.
I wanted to start with just sort of some general historical context, like what, where, and when were the first newspapers in Arkansas?
Well, the first one begins with the Magic Arkansas Gazette,
mm-hmm.
From 1819 onward. First at Arkansas Post, then it relocated a year and some later up to Little Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been cranking, as the Arkansas Gazette, it cranked out until the Great Newspaper War of the late 20th century, when it became the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Right. Owned by the Texarkana Gazette's parent company, I should say, Waco Media.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm.
Was that sort of the only game in town for a long time, or were there other newspapers?
There were other papers that popped up about 11 years later. Was the second one, which was the Arkansas Advocate, also a Little Rock newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Then 2 years after that, in 1832, you have the Arkansas State Democrat in Helena.
Mm-hmm.
And then a third one popped up in Little Rock, which was the Political Intelligencer. Mm-hmm. It didn't last very long, but those are sort of the big ones that started newspapers in Arkansas. Three in Little Rock, one in Helena.
Okay. How were those papers different from what we would see today, or say in late 20th century?
Let me count the ways.
Right.
Katie? First off, they tended to be a four-page paper. They the format was a good bit larger than what we've become used to in modern days of web presses and shrunk page sizes. Very few illustrations, except for possibly a few woodcuts or wood engravings, and that was usually of an advertising nature, like a generic picture of a steamboat on an advertisement for a packet going up the Arkansas River or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the columns were jam-packed with news, both local and stuff received via exchanges with other newspapers around the country. I remember up until the 1850s, you don't have much in the way of telegraphic news, but you had, thanks to a very efficient postal system, you had newspapers that exchanged with other newspapers. And so the news might from New York might show up a couple of weeks or a month late, but you'd have some brief form of it in the Little Rock or the Helena or the Pine Bluff or eventually the Texarkana paper. Then once, of course, telegraphic exchanges became common in the late 19th century, you see more of this. But you find a much denser newspaper, few featured, you know, fancy display ads. No, until the late 19th century, advertisements tended to fit into a newspaper column or be a block that was set across a column, a couple of columns. But they were chewy, and you had plenty of reading material.
Lots of small print. You know, we're used to seeing the big banner headlines, but that's not the way it was back then, right? No. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Katie, if I'm jumping in here.
Okay.
One other difference that set those papers apart from the papers of today is what they were printed on. The substance of the paper. You know, we're talking lead type grade ink on paper that was of a much higher quality than the newsprint that was commonly used by the end of the 19th century. The result was that newspapers from the pre-Civil War era and up through into the 1870s or 1880s, they tend to last longer than more modern papers simply because the stuff they were printed on was higher quality.
I never realized that, but it makes sense. When you're doing that lead type, you need a thicker page or it might just break right through.
And cheap wood pulp paper. What we think of as newsprint, that was a late blooming development.
Interesting.
At that point, you know, newspapers were four pages because paper was more expensive. That made a limitation of its own. You can't publish a huge newspaper on expensive paper and hope to turn a profit.
Right.
But a big four page puppy, you can get a lot of news in there and still be able to make money on it.
Interesting how things come around. Now printing is the sort of the biggest drag down on the whole industry economically.
Don't say that.
Well, it's something we all know. I know sensationalism and sort of political polemic were part of early journalism. Was that something we saw here? I've done some reading about some anti-Catholic newspapers, for instance, that were published in Arkansas.
Early on, it was just the editor and sort of what he wanted to say. And typically, it was very political. Early newspapers were mostly political. What did you say, David?
Yes, very much so. The editor and publisher, often that was the same person. They would have a point of view, and there was no mistaking a newspaper's tilt towards one political or social camp or another. Partisanship was expected in newspapers. Newspapers were created to push partisan agendas. At the same time, there was an effort made to get the facts straight, along with editorial comment, not just confined to an editorial column.
Okay. Right.
Because, you know, when you bought this newspaper, you know, if you bought something that called itself the Anti-Catholic Know-Nothing Herald and Gazette, you knew what you were getting.
So reporting and editorializing mixed together in the same text, right?
And And actually, that led to a lot of dueling between editors. I don't know if you came across that in your research, but there were quite a few duels, old school duels.
Literal duels. Okay.
I believe that was actually outlawed in 1820, but the practice still existed, especially when these editors, they talk bad about each other in their papers, and then they meet over territory lines, state lines, where it wasn't illegal, and would actually duel. Several deaths, some interesting stories related to those.
Mm, interesting.
And when they couldn't bring themselves to step over across the state line to duel physically, they would duel in the in the editorial columns.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the scorn and vitriol is downright heartwarming to read. It sounds so innocent,
right? Something quaint about it.
Mm-hmm.
But
they were deadly serious.
Everything old is new again. We now have dedicated media channels that are polemicized and attack one another.
Yeah.
So it seems kind of obvious, but tell me in your own words what the value is in preserving these old newspapers.
Katie, you go first. I've been at it longer, so I've got too many stale words.
Gosh, that's a loaded question. newspapers gave us a first-person perspective of history, and obviously that's something we want to preserve, so we can see what people were thinking, what people were writing about, what life was like in historic days. So having that as a way to look back and reflect on how Arkansas grew and changed over time. David?
Don't get me started with this, right? Okay. Value of newspapers, they reflect what was known about something at a given time. I choose my words carefully because one of the things that I've done since the late 1980s is judge National History Day competitions.
Mm.
And that's every year. That's where middle school and high school students do primary research on a given historical theme. They find a topic, they do the research, and we point people towards newspapers, not always as a primary source for what happened, the facts of an incident or something, but rather as a primary source for showing what people understood, what people made of what was happening. Mm-hmm. In their community, in their state or territory, in the world around them. Newspapers give a great indication of why people were led to act as they did.
Mm-hmm.
If you look in newspapers, you get a great idea of what circumstances led to, say, the state legislature or county governments or city governments adopting ordinances, statutes that are in many cases still with us today.
Mm.
How the world was reported shaped how our leaders did their jobs.
Mm.
And I think that it's crucial that people understand the interrelationship between knowledge of the world, understanding of the world, and direction, how society drifts, or society progresses or regresses, whatever. Where it goes, it has to know something that... It's best to know something about where it's been and why it got that way.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers give us a great shortcut window into understanding why the past worked out the way it did.
Mm.
And they can do it at the global level. They do it at the granular local level as well. And there are more practical things such as finding out when great-grandpa's death was reported so that you can start researching the will and the probate if there's a family disturbance. That's the sort of thing genealogists, local historians depend upon newspapers because they nail down things that aren't otherwise easy to find.
Yeah, I myself have found facts from old obituaries, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the, you're called? The Arkansas Digital Newspaper Project. I understand it's part of a national project, correct?
Yes. So we are part of the National Digital Newspaper Program, that is a partnership between the Library of Congress and the NEH. And it's an effort, a nationwide effort, to digitize historic newspapers from across the country. All the states are participating or have already participated. The papers that we digitize are then put onto a single website. It's a part of the Library of Congress collection website, and you can search those for free. Currently, Arkansas, we've digitized over 300,000 pages with an additional 100,000 currently being worked on. It should be complete by the end of August. So we're constantly adding new papers to help tell the story of Arkansas history.
That's incredible. Is there some sort of holy grail of a newspaper that may have disappeared that you'd love to see a copy of or something like that?
A lot of the African-American newspapers that we know existed through mentions in other newspapers no longer exist anymore, or we are unable to locate copies of them. That's a big gap in our coverage, which, you know, we're always putting out feelers. If anybody knows of these newspapers, maybe your grandmother saved them. We're always looking for them. But that's a big sort of a gap in coverage just over time. They didn't get collected and preserved like some of the other newspapers.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, maybe someone listening to this might have something in the attic, or you never know.
Yeah. Should I mention our German language papers in this regard?
Right. I was going to say, we have come across papers from people donating or lending them to us, which has been really helpful.
Mm. One example of this, Little Rock once had not one, but two German language weekly newspapers.
Wow.
The Arkansas Echo, Das Echo, and the Staatszeitung, the Arkansas State News. The State Archives holds, I believe, a partial copy of one issue of the Staatszeitung.
Wow.
However, many years ago, we microfilmed Das Echo, and we wanted to contribute Das Echo to the National Digital Newspaper Program, get that on Chronicling America. You know, it's all in Fraktur, that lovely German black letter font and everything. Mm-hmm. But it was Arkansas News and so forth. However, our microfilm was, shall I say, awful?
Mm-hmm.
It frequently is,
I found.
It looked like it had been filmed on Friday afternoons and Monday mornings.
Yeah.
However, one of our microfilming staff noticed that in a book he found a reference to the author who had relied on Das Echo. She had been given access to copies of the originals held by the monks at Subiaco Abbey.
Huh.
And so I contacted the archivist, who's also the former abbot over there, Father Jerome. And he graciously allowed us to capture several volumes of Das Echo, which allowed us to retire our junk microfilm and contribute good microfilm to this program. So took the trip over to Subiaco, brought the volumes back. It was fun.
That sounds great.
Now, the problem is we're still looking for the Staatszeitung. Subiaco had the Echo because that was the Catholic German newspaper. Staatszeitung, I don't know if it was Protestant or secular or what, because we only have that one issue. So we're still on the lookout for the Staatszeitung. Anybody got that up in their attic? We would love to talk with you.
Interesting. Yeah,
I'm hoping these sort of things will pop up.
Yeah, I would expect that in the hill country of Texas, but not in Arkansas, but I guess there are immigrants everywhere, huh?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What else do I need to? Let's talk about the Gazette itself. The Texarkana Gazette, that is. Is there any special knowledge you have about the Texarkana Gazette that people might be interested in? It's sort of open-ended question.
One thing you might not be familiar with, or maybe you are, but maybe readers aren't, is how many times it changed hands over the years. Mm-hmm. Prior to, so the current paper was created from a merger of previous papers. Mm-hmm. And so we have, as part of what we do, is we do in-depth research on these newspapers and print what we call a title essay, along with the newspapers on the website, Chronicling America. Mm-hmm. So you can actually go on and read all about the Texarkana Gazette and the history of it. It brings it up to present day, if that's applicable, which it is in this case. But it did change hands quite a few times. Mm-hmm. Over the years, and then of course it merged, two titles merged to create the current Texarkana Gazette.
Right. I'll definitely look at that on your website and put a link to that in our show notes. I wasn't aware of that website. It's should be really interesting to just dig around in.
It is really interesting to dig around in. And if you're doing any kind of research in any of the papers, it's good to have context of what that paper was about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe not so much the who purchased from who. That stuff is important for researchers, but it's more interesting to sort of see what this paper was, you know, mm-hmm. Were they Democratic leaning, you know, what's the history of the paper, to give you context for the research you might be doing. So, mm-hmm. So the essays accompany all of the newspapers that we digitize for Chronicling America.
Interesting. These days, of course, everything is digital. How do you think about that in terms of future historians?
Can you take a swing at that one, Katie?
Why don't you start, David?
Okay. Well, first off, I remain, in spite of having become an enthusiastic supporter of this, I'm still a digital skeptic. Digital access is great as access. Mm-hmm. Preservation, not so much.
Right.
Digital files are inherently mutable. That's why we're the last operation in this state to rely on microfilm for durable preservation.
Okay.
But, you know, the future is in making best use of digital for access purposes, mm-hmm. and digital for capture. We have retired our 1950s and 1960s vintage microfilm cameras. Yes, small round of applause.
Yay. Progress.
We now capture via scanning. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, capturing online PDFs of some of the papers that have gone to exclusively online presences. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who grew up, A, in a print shop, and B, my first job in history was shooting microfilm, there's a part of me that reflexively clings to analog. It's like going into a library and discovering closed stacks, as I did this weekend at a local school. Now, the librarians will find it for you. You can do a search engine. You can do a word cloud. No, it's not the same as having your hands on the goodies.
Right.
But it's the new paradigm. And what we are bending over backwards to do with the Arkansas Digital Newspaper Project is to make use of this partnership with the National Archives, with the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Library of Congress, to make as representative a sampling of Arkansas journalism as is possible, available for free for anybody around the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that Katie and Chelsea, her colleague right now, and their predecessors in this program have done a great job of finding newspapers that reflect the widest possible variety of Arkansas journalism over time, you know, with the limitations of copyright date and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And also limited by what has survived and the condition of the microfilm, Because as I say, sometimes they look like they were doing it on Friday afternoon and they just wanted to get out of the office. But that's in the far distant past. We make the best use of the best available microfilm to give as comprehensive and as honest a picture of Arkansas past as we can. And this is something when I was doing my dissertation back in the 1990s, I would have killed to have a resource like this. It's revolutionized historical scholarship by putting so many resources at your fingertips. Doing research in your pajamas is not just a joke anymore.
Right.
Yeah. It's reality.
I would like to reiterate what David is saying. Access is sort of our main goal for this, giving anyone access to, that's why it is free and available to the public. But also, I know David's partial to microfilm, but microfilm can be very tedious, and you actually have to be on site to...
Tedious?
You have to be on site. You have to visit our research room to do the research, and that's not an option for everyone. This allows you to research from home. It also allows you to search using OCR technology, optical character recognition. That's how you get your search bar. That's what happens behind the scenes. And so, you know, you're searching for a particular name or a particular article. You type that in your search bar, and it returns the results to you instantly. If you're using microfilm, you're going to, you know, you're prone to missing things. There's a lot of advances that digitizing newspapers gives us that makes research easier for people, quicker, and overall more accessible. Yeah.
And I second your emotion on that, Katie. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a part of me that thought people won't look at the context if they're simply being drawn to a particular story, because it's cool when you have your keyword searches in and you pull the X number of pages and what you want where those keywords appear is highlighted. That's magic. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't stop you from looking around.
Right.
You know, for a 1915 story, you've got a story on Prohibition, you've got a story on something from Arkansas State Government, you've got reports from Pancho Villa's raids down on the border all together.
I would argue it gives you more time to look around.
You're targeting what you're looking for, but you still have access to that wider context.
It's serendipity, yeah.
Oh, you bet.
Well, we're just about out of time. Thanks so much for taking some time to talk to me. This has been very, very interesting, and I'm sure our listeners will think so too.
Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah. It's been a great time talking with you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks very much. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. Follow On the Line on our website, texarkanagazette.com/podcast. To support the show, post a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. And please, spread the word by sharing a link or telling a friend. I write, produce, and edit the show, and I'd love to hear from you. Email me at krichter@texarkanagazette.com and let me know what you think. I'll see you next time on The Line.